Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, have you ever wondered how microphones were invented and all the different kinds like dynamic and ribbon and cardioid and electric condenser and all that? Well, John Holt is with us, and he's an expert. He's going to take us through the development of microphones. It's fascinating. TWRT is brought to you by Lavo and the Ruby Visual Radio Console. Ruby's a new kind of console for a new radio environment. By BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, where it's the June summer clearance. Save up to 54% at BSWUSA.com. And by the Telos Alliance and the new OmniVolt audio processor. Leave your competition in the dust. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and just delighted that you're here joining us. We've got a great show. I've been talking with this gentleman, our guest, for a while about coming on the show and talking about a passion of his in broadcast engineering. And that, as you may have noticed by the name of this show, that is vintage microphones. And this is something that, as an engineer, I know very little about. So we're going to hear stories about how these microphones were invented, how they were manufactured, and how they were used early in the 20th century, in the 1920s, the 1930s, and whatever else that John Holt has to share with us. So, hey, by the way, you may notice I'm not in my usual office in Nashville. I'm actually in Greenville, Mississippi. Yeah, they have internet here, kind of. And I'm in the studios of the Delta radio stations, Delta Radio Network stations in Greenville, Mississippi. We have, four stations here. Yeah. We have a urban R&B station. We have a CHR. We have a traditional classic country station and a news talk station, an AM that has a translator. So all those stations part of the Delta Radio Network. And so I'm in the big control room here. I've been doing a little bit of work this past week. All right, enough about that. Let's bring in our guest, John Holt from Charlottesburg, Virginia.
Charlottesville,
Virginia. John, welcome in. Glad you're here.
It is kind of a burg, but thank you. And I'm in the studios of WVTF Radio IQ, their Charlottesville studios. WVTF is part of Virginia Tech out of Roanoke, and covers a lot of the state of Virginia with their various stations and translators.
So you're in a studio that provides contribution to the larger network?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
I'm the only one here at the moment, but...
Well, when we were connecting yesterday, there was a lady who was putting together some news stories, I believe.
Yes, Sandy, and that would have gone on the within All Things Considered or on in the morning during Morning Edition. Sandy's taking the day off today.
Well, tell you what, we usually start out with a our first commercial and get that out of the way and get right into the meat of the show. But before we do that, I wonder if you might introduce our listeners and viewers to John Holt. I know you, John, associated with the call letters WAMU, and that also you figured, hey, it is time for me to retire and enjoy some of the things that I'm passionate about and wanted to enjoy, but engineering never gave me the time to. So tell us, give us the elevator story about who John Holt is.
I've been in broadcasting for close to 50 years, and I think my passion for microphones started when my uncle, who was the mayor of the town I grew up in, Marshall, Michigan, when I was about 7 years old, he took me to a radio studio where he was being interviewed, and here was this big RCA microphone. I was 7 years old. I fell in love with it, so I got into broadcasting. And worked in commercial radio from 70 to 74, then at WMUK in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and then I built the first station at New Hampshire Public Radio, and then I was with Minnesota Public Radio for 7 years, and then a few years with Jefferson Public Radio, and then the last 20 years until retirement 3 years ago with WAMU in Washington.
Now, WAMU is with a university, right? Is that
that's American University, yes.
American University, okay. Okay, good deal. So you've been in both commercial radio and the public radio realms, both, right?
Right, but only 4 years in commercial radio. I think I had a passion for radio drama and doing recordings of all different kinds of music, and I was able to fulfill that passion in public radio, which I couldn't do in commercial radio.
Right, right, yeah. And you know what? That kind of probably goes hand in hand with your passion for microphones, because in commercial radio, sure, we have microphones. There are four mics in this very studio right here, but they're almost secondary to a lot of the programming. I'm sure we do a morning show. We have a live hip hop show in this very studio. In fact, it's coming up in 3 hours. I got to clear out. but in public radio, where you have time to do more talk and radio drama, you get a much more chance to exercise different kinds of microphones. And I guess that's one thing we'll be talking about after the break, yeah?
Right. And we had most of the places that I've worked had a, let's call it a mic closet, like you would find at a recording studio. So you would have the Neumann condenser microphones, AKG microphones, likely some ribbon microphones, a number of dynamics. And we had a knowledge of how to use them for the various programs we did and the various musical groups that were being recorded or broadcast.
Well, you've got some microphones to show us there. We're going to look at those a little bit later in the show. And right now, though, it's time to tell you about one of the groups that makes this show possible. We have three sponsors, and one of them has been with us for a long time. And that's our friends at Lavo, L-A-W-O, .com. It's pronounced Lavo. It's a German company. And, you know, Lavo has made big, those huge broadcast consoles for live events and television events. They've made those for decades now and really well engineered. In fact, they have Lavo consoles at NPR in Washington, D.C., as well as other places around the world like the BBC and the CBC. Well, Lavo has definitely moved into the smaller radio console world as well. And that's what I want to introduce you to and make sure you know about Lavo as an option, and look at them to see if they have what you need. If you go to a special website, it'll really give us credit and help us the whole situation and take you right to where you want to go. Go to lavo.com/twert. That'll take you right to a special page with their radio products, the radio on-air products, at lavo.com/twert. You can go there right now and leave that page up, you know, while you're listening or viewing our show. They have a whole selection of radio consoles, traditional radio consoles, built in modularly, and these are very popular, easy to use, of course, and of the highest quality. And they have a lot of features built in that are pretty interesting. Things like this auto mix, where you can set the faders about where they need to be and let auto mix do the work of keeping your mix exactly where it should be. This is especially useful in talk shows where you have multiple personalities, some booming in louder over others, and auto mix really helps keeps things in check. There's also virtual radio, and this is where you have a touchscreen that has a representation of an audio console on it. And it's not, they didn't just, you know, copy paste some CAD pictures onto the screen. They really designed the buttons and knobs and faders on the screen to be very touch friendly. So that's what they call virtual radio. There's also routing systems, and they do reliable, 6 9s of reliability kind of audio routing around the plant. A lot of that is using the Ravenna standard that Lavo is very proud of and proud to be part of that, and also AES-67 compatible. And then there's this new Relay product that's pretty interesting. It's all about virtual radio, their Relay product. That's where you can have all the functionality of a radio station just right inside one computer, one box. Other things that add into their mix, the Crystal Clear console, that's one we've talked about that's part of virtual radio. They have a product called VisTool. VisTool helps you design interfaces, custom design either displays or actual interfaces that you would use, so you can see signal flow and control signals with their product called VisTool. And then a range of consoles like the Crystal, the Sapphire Compact, and the Sapphire console, and the new Ruby console. So check all that out, if you would, at Lavo, lavo.com/twert. Take you right where you need to go. And really appreciate Lavo being a sponsor. Bill Bennett is the U.S. representative for Lavo. He's been on our show before, and you ought to give Bill a call if this kind of thing sounds interesting to you. He'll explain it all, and just good stuff. All right. Let's get back with John Holt talking about vintage microphones. John, where do you want to begin this discussion of vintage microphones?
Well, let's start with the people who invented them. And actually, today happens to be the 114th birthday of Alan Blumlein, who essentially invented stereo and the microphone technique that bears his name, which was crossed figure eights to produce a stereo effect, which is called the bloom line technique. And this was all worked out by him in the 1930s. And I think he also came up with the mid-side recording technique, which really is an offshoot of the crossed figure eights. And can be resolved into a cross cardioid if you do the mathematics on it, shall we say. Looking at the other people involved in microphones, we think of the dynamic microphone as probably the most popular microphone today, and we'll see some old ones shortly. But that was actually invented by Siemens in 1874, but they couldn't do a lot with it because it needed some amplification. And then in 1877, to go along with the telephone, Thomas Edison came up with the carbon microphone, but Emil Berliner was also considered an inventor of the carbon microphone, and I actually have a contact with, I think it's his grandson, who wants people to know that that Berliner did indeed invent the microphone, the carbon microphone, and not Edison, but we won't quibble about that. Bell Labs invented the condenser microphone. It had actually been around the principle of a, I guess it would be called electrostatic charge on a plate and that producing a voltage. But the voltage was so low that it needed an amplifier right away. Well, the triode amplifier wasn't invented until 1915, and by 1916 and 17, E.C. Wendt of Bell Labs had come up with the first condenser microphone. But they were very large, they were bulky, they required several tubes, power supplies, at that time batteries. So that waited for a few more years before, and for the need for broadcasting before they really were developed. And his point of developing it was for a test microphone for testing phone systems and voice response and this kind of thing. And it was the best microphone ever developed at that time. Then a gentleman named Gerlach invented the ribbon microphone. He applied for a patent for it in 1924. And that's what, for some reason, a name I should know like my own, I've forgotten. Harry Olson of RCA Labs, actually RCA Photophone originally, took that design of the ribbon and developed the ribbon microphone that is so popular, so popularly known from the 30s and the 40s.
You know, speaking of the ribbon microphone inventor, I'm looking up some of these things as you're talking, and my goodness, we're going to have a lot of show notes. I'm going to provide plenty of reference material folks can go to. But I noticed that in addition to Erwin Gerlach, whose name I hadn't heard before, so thank you for introducing me to that name with the ribbon microphone, apparently Dr. Walter Schottky was also involved with that. He was friends with Erwin Gerlach, and Schottky brings up another device in electronics that we're familiar with, and that the Schottky diode. So apparently this guy had hands in a couple of things.
Well, I think they were all commingling, so shall we say, in their development of various devices for broadcast and telephone and other purposes. And in the U.S., all the companies originally had turned their patents over to one company. And to some extent, that's how RCA came about. It was owned by three different companies. It eventually divorced itself from all of those companies, but the equipment was often made by General Electric or Western Electric in the Westinghouse, rather, in the 20s before RCA bought the Victrola company and established its factory in Camden.
Okay.
Let's We'll take a look at a few of these microphones.
Yeah, yeah, you've got a collection there.
The single-button carbon was what Berliner Berliner and Edison came up with. But it looks a lot like this. You've seen them.
Sure. Okay, so that's a single button.
It works well with a telephone system. It has a peak frequency response right in the range that the telephone is best suited for. Sure. But it wasn't very well suited for broadcasting.
Right.
So they developed the double button carbon. And I'm going to pick up this camera that I have here.
Sure,
and
go right ahead.
And switch to the other side here, and now I think we'll be able to see some of these microphones much better.
Ah, good,
and
okay.
Here we have the double-button carbon, and we have two versions of it. This is the B1 housing, which came out in the early 1920s and had inside it the double-button carbon microphone. Now, if we move over a little bit, we'll see the actual insides of that housing, and there is the double-button carbon. It's sort of let's call it a push-pull kind of arrangement. Instead of the single button with a battery in series, it has a transformer with a power supply in that center tap of the transformer, and then each side of the transformer feeds the or is connected to the two different buttons. This flattened out the frequency response and made it very useful for broadcast.
So, John, was there a button on each side, front and back?
And there is a carbon button, but there's a there's a diaphragm in the middle. All of these microphones, until the invention of the ribbon, were pressure microphones, which means they were non-directional. It was a single diaphragm. It was a pressure microphone. Where you see the bar in the front of this, that is the front of the microphone. And what people would generally be facing, but again, the sound was picked up from all directions. But as with most omnidirectional microphones, there is a high frequency discrimination towards the back. It's the low frequencies that are essentially omnidirectional.
Okay.
The microphones had issues. The carbon would get let's call it soggy, for lack of a better word. And so the frequency response would go down, the output level would go down. And they'd take the microphones at night at the end of the broadcast day and put them in the oven at the radio station and bake the moisture out of it. So when the morning announcer...
Really?
Yes, when the morning announcer came in and pulled the microphone out of the oven, he had a hot microphone, which meant that it sounded good.
Wow. I had never
heard that. That term is still used today, I think, but people don't realize where it came from.
Sure.
The largest manufacturer of the carbon microphones was Western Electric. The original model of the carbon in the that was probably used in the B1 case was the 369. Then they made the 387, which is the one that you see with the NBC logo over it. And NBC did use a lot of them. But then the last refinement in the carbon microphone was the Model 600 from Western Electric. Now, a lot of companies still made, besides Western Electric, carbon microphones and other kinds. Conversation and tour with Bob Paquette at his office in Milwaukee. He has over 5,000 microphones. And he had talked to Lou Burrows, who was one of the founders of Electrovoice in 1927. And Lou had told him that he thought there were probably 80 or more manufacturers of microphones in 1930, all making mics in their garage. As kind of where Lou and his partner Al started was in the basement of a service station in South Bend, Indiana. And then they moved 15, 20 miles away to Buchanan, Michigan. The other popular microphone of the 20s was the condenser. Western Electric made a condenser, and Westinghouse made one for RCA. What we see here is the RCA 4A used by NBC. You see the condenser element in the front. Inside that large, and I'll put my hand here to show how large it is. Inside that large housing was three tubes with some packing. You see a hole in the top so some of the heat from those tubes can get out. This was a model 4AA, the second A standing for announce, which meant it was on a desk stand. You could get another little screw-on device for the bottom of it and put it on a program stand, as they wanted to call it at the time. So that would have been a 4AP. You could also get a hanging device to hang it from a rope, and that had another model number, and I have no idea what that is at the moment. But at any rate, the condenser, Western Electric, obviously with the Bell Labs having the original design, by 1930 had six different versions. The Western Electric condensers were used by CBS and a number of other operations. NBC exclusively used the RCA condenser. There was a model before this, the 3A, that looked like almost like a lantern. It was a round can with a round protrusion coming out of the middle of it, which was the condenser element. And then it had three tubes stuck inside. It was strange looking. This is a box or camera, as they often called it. Condenser had was much better looking, shall we say, for the broadcast and stage use. Now, these were the two microphones that were generally used in broadcast through the 20s, the carbon and the condenser. In 1928, Harry Olson of Photophone, RCA Photophone, which was the motion picture division, really, started working on a ribbon microphone. There were not high-quality magnets at the time. His first ribbon design, and the one that's in the patent application, is a electromagnet, and then amplifiers within a housing to very much like the amplifier used in the condenser. But by the time the microphone was introduced, they had a high output magnets, and so they were able to take all of that away and have a microphone that was standalone with no amplifiers, no power supply needed. And the same thing was done over at Western Electric, only their microphone was a dynamic. And so it was the first real use of the principle that Siemens came up with back in 1874 of the moving coil dynamic microphone. Both of these, the dynamic, as we call it, and the ribbon, considered electrodynamic microphones, just a different principle of it. Now I'm going to move around here just a bit.
John, I'm curious about the development of dynamic, and you can answer this later on if it makes more sense to put it in later on, but curious about dynamic microphones, their development and practicality versus loudspeakers, because surely people figured out that a loudspeaker could be a microphone, that if you move the coil and the paper cone,
that's correct,
you could put a voltage out. So I wonder, guess I'm a little surprised that dynamic mics took so long to come about.
They still had the same issue of magnets. So the speakers of the 20s and the 30s were electromagnets. So often tube B-plus supply went through the coil on the speaker to produce the magnet that the not the coil, but well, a large coil on the back of it, let's put it that way, which was then there to for the voice coil to be driven against. I think that probably it wasn't until the 30s that speakers with a passive, shall we call it, magnet were in use in radios.
Okay, gotcha. That makes sense now. Thank you.
And that goes along with the Olson's need to use a electromagnet for his first ribbon assemblies. But right here we have both the Western Electric 618 dynamic, the very first useful dynamic microphone on the left side, and it's a wonderful old stand. And one of the interesting things, you know, we all know the XLR connector that is ubiquitous in audio these days.
Sure.
People had a hard time getting audio connectors locally. Okay. And so the Hubble AC connector with three-prong twist lock.
Oh, my goodness.
Figure out where we are here. There we are. There it is. You could pick that up at the hardware store.
Yeah.
So many, many auditoriums and other radio stations and whatever were used 15 or 20 amp twist locks.
Wow.
So, like that.
We've both seen the pictures, the funny, humorous pictures on Facebook where somebody makes up a cable and it has XLR on one end and a Hubble twist lock on the other. And you're thinking, oh my goodness, that could be bad.
No, that was very, very common. And I've been to a number of radio stations that have been around since the 40s. Well, they probably aren't anymore. This would have been 40 years ago that had the twist locks in the wall. I also had a number of radio stations where the microphone output was the female connector. And the reason is that they were wired up by electricians. And as far as they were concerned, the microphone was the generator. And so, therefore, the output of the generator had to be a female connector.
Yeah. How about that?
And I went through and rewired a number of auditoriums because of that. The two 1931 microphones, the dynamic and the ribbon. Now, the ribbon has three very big horseshoe magnets in it. And then it comes up to an assembly at the top where the ribbon is. And the ribbon is a very elegant design because you have just a simple piece of metal in a magnetic field. The faster it moves, the higher the output, and you can move it faster two ways the amplitude, if you will, at the same frequency or at the same amplitude by doubling the frequency. Therefore, it has a 6 dB rise per octave. Now, they set the ribbon for a particular resonance, usually around 25 to 35 hertz. Well, this first-order resonance has a 6 dB per octave roll-off. So you give the 6 dB rise and the 6 dB roll-off, and you have a flat frequency response. And it's a very simple, elegant design.
Okay.
Now, this, as I said, came out in 31. They came out with a modification of it in 38, and then another one in 39 to 40, which became the 44B and then the 44BX. And that was the model that was used up until they stopped production of the 44 in 1959. They then came out with a newer version in 61, the BK-11. And that was made until RCA ceased microphone production altogether in 1973, although they still had a number of microphones in stock to sell. Because of the popularity of the Dynamic, RCA came out with their own version that looked very much like it. Only, and this was the Model 50A, but it had a bit of a difference. RCA was kind of stuck with that single wire or ribbon technology. So this was called an inductor microphone, and it had a football shield, football field kind of shaped or racetrack, let's say, diaphragm with a single wire attached to it, just like the ribbon was a single wire. And that produced the output voltage, which then had to immediately go into a transformer to step up. The ribbon and the inductor are essentially a current device, and you had to step it up to provide a voltage to drive a line. So this was their answer, which came out in 1933. But it very quickly went away, shall we say. Now, after the 44, the figure of eight ribbon, it picks up the front and the back. On the sides, the response is probably 90 dB down. So perfect rejection on the side.
Yeah, now, I'd say so.
Once Harry Olson was finished with that, he was looking into a directional microphone. Now, this microphone is huge here, and this came out in 33. It's the original RCA 77. It was cardioid only, and basically they took two ribbons, or actually a single ribbon, and clamped it in the middle to essentially make two ribbons, that middle being the common point. So the top one was connected to a tube in the back, and the tube had material in it to dampen the sound, and that made the top ribbon a pressure omnidirectional device. The bottom ribbon was open to the air front and back, and it made it a like the 44, which, by the way, is referred to as velocity. A lot of people use the ribbon and velocity microphones interchangeably, but the velocity only describes a figure of eight pattern. A cardioid ribbon microphone is not a velocity microphone. Only the figure eight part is a velocity. Otherwise, it's simply a ribbon. So the interesting thing here, let me move this chair out of the way. What I have here is the inside of the center part being right in here, of this where the tube went making the omnidirectional part of the microphone. And so it went around and around. Now, here we see some of the damping material that was used in the microphone. Now, what is that? I'll tell you what it is. It's British cow hair. Not American cow hair, not Canadian, not Argentine, but British cow hair. And all of the 77s and the 30s and 40s used British cow hair. Sorry, I have a hard time looking at the video and what I'm doing at the same time. I should have brought a helper. So that was a very popular microphone, the first cardioid microphone. Now, actually, RCA called it unidirectional, even though a unidirectional microphone is a cardioid microphone. And the mathematical vector summation of a figure of eight and an omnidirectional is a pure cardioid.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they are perfectly matched, then it has an extremely deep null in the back. Now, one of the problems with this microphone is that while they started out being perfectly matched, the velocity section could have attention to stretch because of the fact that it would go back and forth front and back without that closure on the back. And so eventually it did not have the same frequency response as the top section of the microphone.
Oh, so you had a mismatch there in the frequency response.
Right. And so they had to be sent back for adjustment and so on. Okay, now we're going to move on to more dynamics, because by the mid-1930s, they wanted smaller ones. The magnets were better, and Weston Electric came out with what was fondly referred to as the 8-ball. And you can see why.
Yes, indeed. I've never seen the back of one.
This was extremely popular in both motion picture and radio broadcasting. Mm-hmm. In the motion picture use, they would put a device on top here to make it more directional. And we can see something similar to that right here. If you see the something like that would go on top and stop the sound coming from the back, making it directional. This was a popular design because the Western Electric engineers said the way the sound traveled around this produced a much better omni pattern. Now, I think you can even see that Electrovoice used something like that with their 635A in 1965. It still has a design very similar to that.
Sure. You're right. Okay.
Now, shortly after that, they came out with the 633 microphone, which is what we see here.
I've seen those.
And they could be with the connector on the back, which took the same as the 8-ball, or without it. And then, of course, the shield that I showed you would go on that microphone, slipping on it. And again, very popular. And that microphone was in the Altec catalog until 1970.
I was going to say, Altec is the name I've seen associated with that. And the term salt shaker, is that right?
The salt, yes. As a matter of fact, I have a gone friend who had me take the insides out of it and put a piece of plastic in the bottom, and he used it as a salt shaker.
John, I've got to take a pause right here.
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll. It sounds like we're stopping close to the war years. And
we're getting. We've got a few more microphones to look at before we, and then we will basically be at the conclusion of the development of the major developments of microphones.
Cool. Well, let's hang on for just a minute, and we'll make mention of our sponsor, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, and be right back. Take a breather. You deserve one. Remember, just an inside baseball. Your mic will be hot during my commercial here. So, okay, hot mic, to use the phrase that John just told us about. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by the folks at Broadcast Supply Worldwide. By the way, I'm Kirk Harnack. If you just tuned in, I'm Kirk Harnack, along with John Holt, former director of engineering at WAMU and a microphone connoisseur, passionate about antique microphones and the history and of their development. And that's what we're talking about on this show. And we're still, hey, Chris Tobin may still join us. We'll see. He's been stuck at that New Jersey Turnpike. Is responsible for more difficulty, I'll tell you. Broadcast Supply Worldwide, that's at bswusa.com. They are a sponsor of the show, and I really appreciate them, especially appreciate John Lynch, Brian Seeley, and Tim Schweiger. They have really put together a great company and a great sales effort. And what that does for you, the customer, if you need something right away, BSW has got just a ton of things in stock in their warehouse that is right next to, or just down the street from, a UPS aircraft shipping facility in Columbus, Ohio. And that means you can order from BSW as late as about 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and you've got a really good chance of getting what you need tomorrow. If you want to pay for overnight shipping, you can get it quickly. And if you just need 2 or 3 day shipping, it's, you know, still the same process. You can order it late at night, up until 7 p.m. Eastern time. So what are they doing this month? Well, it's almost the end of June. So it's almost the end of their big June clearance sale. Apparently, June is the time to clear old stuff out, get the warehouse ready for the next batch of stuff to come in during the summer. And they have some great things that are on sale. For example, the BSW exclusive is the Orban Optimod 5500i. That's a dual-input 5-band processor, very low latency, and full-featured RDS-RBDS generator in a compact package. Here's something else, a cool codec pack. You can save up to almost $1,300 off their Tyline VIA portable codec bundle. You get a revolutionary VIA portable codec, 2 pair of Shure, Audio-Technica, Sennheiser, AKG, or Beyerdynamic headsets with installed connectors ready to go, and a rugged Gator utility bag. Depending on which package you pick, up to $1,300 off of that package, almost $1,300, just shy of that. Also on sale, a $200 discount on a Tascam, this is their SS, which means solid state, R250N. Now, that's a networkable solid state recorder player. It supports high-res audio and can upload recordings and download files for playback via an FTP server. So that can be your, instead of a big computer, this can be your easy interface to getting audio up and down off an FTP site. There's also a mixer that's on sale. It is the JK Audio Remote Mix 4. Now, BSW has some B-stocks of these in stock, and that means full factory warranty, factory packaging, but it's just a little bit gently used. And, of course, full factory specs, and like I said, full warranty. That's only $1,109.66 for a beautiful portable mixer from JK Audio. Finally, I want to tell you about these headsets. I've used these. Love them. They're the Shure BRH50M. That's a on-camera headset microphone, great for your sports remotes. It's not too early to be thinking about your fall football season. That's coming up before you know it. Kids go back to school. Some of those football games even start before the school year starts. So get your headsets ready to go for your sports remote package. These are on sale for $399. That's Shure's BRH50M. Really nice headsets for you. More on sale. Save up to 54%. During their summer clearance sale, the June summer clearance at BSW. And the website, bswusa.com, or you can call them. They are standing by the phones at 800-426-8434. It's 800-426-8434. I got to tell you, you know what? We get the BSW catalog, and it is invaluable. You know, you can flip through it quickly, find what's on sale, find the hot products, what are other people buying, what is popular, what is solving broadcast problems for other broadcast engineers and radio stations. And, you know, the BSW catalog has been famous for years and years as the quick go-to reference point. And, of course, their website is fabulous. Reference prices, their discount prices, it's all online. BSWUSA.com. Thanks a lot to Brian, Tim, John Lynch, everybody there for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we're with John Holt, microphone connoisseur extraordinaire, and he's talking about the development of these microphones that started way back, even before the 1920s, back in the 19th century when people were starting to build microphones that didn't even have amplifiers for them yet, but they were ahead of their time. John, what are we looking for next? We were in the 1930s.
We're in the late 30s, and the RCA came up with a new dynamic microphone at that point, the 88A, and you see a picture of it here. This became very popular and was made until 1954, 16 years. It was used for practically everything. NBC actually liked to use them in the newsroom. Because of the bright, crisp sound. But they were good as an omnidirectional dynamic microphone. They were good for outdoors as well and had a lot of use in every possible conceivable purpose for radio broadcast.
I'm a little confused. Which end of that did you talk into?
The silver one.
Okay. Okay, right here. That in right there. Okay,
it's got some. Cool. It's got a grill on it there that you can see.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Cable.
Yeah,
okay. The cable comes out the back. This one actually has been modified with a UA connector, which NBC was popular. They were popular with NBC when they came out in around 1948 or so.
So I take it that a lot of those were sold well without mic flags, and it was just a bullet looking affair. There, right.
Right. Right.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm. And there were many, many companies making mic flags to fit on all of these different microphones. Some of them are rather difficult to put them on, but they were difficult looking as well when you saw them. While this was going on, RCA changed the design of the ribbon microphone, the 77. Their first one was the 77B, making it still cardioid only, but about this size, much smaller than the very big one we see over there, the bullet, if you will, or maybe it's a shell. This one is the 77C, which came out 2 years later. At that time, they sold both the B cardioid only and the C. The C, they figured out, and this was because of something Western Electric was coming out with, which we'll show in a moment, that they could switch the to the top ribbon or the bottom ribbon or the combination. And so the switch is right down here on the bottom.
Oh,
and you can see the three different patterns, cardioid or unidirectional, as RCA wanted to call it, omnidirectional, and then figure eight over there. Whichever one was in the center was the pattern that was in use. Now, when you, because of the addition of the two microphones together, the forward, the output when you talked into the front of it was 6 dB hotter in the cardioid position than it was in the Omni or the figure eight.
Sure, that makes sense, yeah.
So, at about that same time, Western Electric came out with their first directional microphone, which was fondly called the Bird Cage. And it's the model 369. And this came out with the three pattern switch on the back of it.
So now, that's the mic that's called the Birdcage. I never knew which mic that was. I've heard the name Birdcage. Never knew which. Okay, that one. And what was the formal name of that one?
Well, the model number was the 639. And they actually, and this is where the first use of the word cardioid came from, that Western Electric actually called the combination pattern cardioid. And it was rather interesting. I had this in the studio. Well, let me back up just a bit. These were made from 1939 on and sold by Altec after 1948. Mm-hmm. And the mic again was made until 1970 and sold. It was used extensively at CBS since they wanted nothing to do with RCA. So both radio and television used these microphones almost exclusively in the cardioid position. But I had one in the studio at WAMU one day, and Dan Shore, who I'm sure anyone who's been around for a while is, remembers the old newsman, and he was at the coffee machine, and I was walking by, and he turned and said, "A cardioid," and lit all up because he remembered them from his days at CBS. But I never saw any difference in the patterns or anything between this and the RCA 77 microphones, and why everyone would call this one a cardioid and the others not. I don't know. Came out with a version that had six position switch on the back, so that if you added not just you know, a one-on-one audition, but reduce the level of the Omni. You could have it as a supercardioid and have some variations of that. So all production on microphones basically stopped during the war. But in 1945, RCA came out with the 77D, another version of this microphone had a six-position switch on the back of it, although it did not switch between different microphones. It changed a shutter location on the back of the microphone, but it did have the six different patterns. Now, the Western Electric had two different microphones in it. It had a ribbon element for the velocity, and then in the bottom of the unit, it had the dynamic element from the eight ball that we see back there. Mm-hmm. And so the dynamic element was the omnidirectional, and the ribbon element was the velocity figure of eight, and that's how they came up with the various patterns. Now, while this was going on and these microphones were being introduced in the late 30s, Ben Bauer at Shure was working on using a single element for a cardioid or unidirectional response. And that became fruitful. He figured out the phase relationships and the number of holes and so forth needed for this in the back to create a cardioid pattern with a single dynamic element. And that microphone was the 55. This is a later version from 1955, or 51 rather, the 55S. S stands for small, because the one that came out in 39 was a large one. Everybody knows this microphone. Everybody has seen one of these. My understanding is that the grill design he copied from a 1938 Pontiac.
I've heard that's called the Elvis mic, or at least Scotty Moore, who sang backup vocals, said that's the Elvis mic.
Well, and Elvis used that a mic like that, and it was the small version like this one. He also sang into 77s and 44s and others in the studio. This is the one you generally think of as being on stage. When one thinks about microphones, then we have come basically to the point where, at this point, microphones didn't change. They were just refined. Once we had the cardioid with a single element, dynamic, and then the ribbon single element, multi-pattern or polydirectional, as RCA called it, we didn't have any real change in microphones until 1962, when Western Electric or Bell Labs came up with the Electret, another version of the condenser microphone, which allowed it to have a charged condenser element that did not require a voltage from a supply to be applied to it all the time. Mm-hmm. So basically, I think, and pardon me while I move over here, that microphones... Yes, we've got, can't see the forest for the trees here. But I think that the microphones really haven't changed a whole lot since then, and really not much at all since the mid-1960s. The 635A from Electro Voice is still made today. The RE20 is still made today. Shure's SM7... the SM57, 58, those are still made today.
Yeah.
Still sold today. You can't really refine something past a certain point. You can make them lighter. You can use higher output magnets, and we do see that. We have an increase in the output of the dynamics with of about 6 dB due to the ND magnet, which was developed probably 20 years or more ago now.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the development of the microphone. But I do have one more I want to show you, though.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is a wireless microphone that was used in the 1940s for the political conventions in Chicago. So it's 27 megahertz, double sideband AM, has a nice little tuning coil on the top here. And they would hold it like this. There's three piezoelectric crystals microphones inside here added together. And then that fed the grid stage of the first tube. And the plane, it was fairly heavy because it had three batteries in it.
Ooh.
It's, you know, you think of a wireless microphone as something that is a fairly modern invention, but not really.
What year was that, the first year?
I think 1940. They had a bigger version that was used at the conventions, 1944 and 48. This one would have been used by NBC.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, and now I'm a little younger than you, not much, but I remember at political conventions seeing pictures of the body pack with an antenna sticking out the top, or maybe even a hat with the a cap of some kind with an antenna sticking out the top of that for reporters down on the floor of the convention. What, did and those come along in the 60s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that sounds very much like what you would have seen in 64 and 68. But then obviously things got a lot smaller. Now that's a refinement that one could do is the you know, I have a when I acquired this probably 17 years ago now, a friend of mine who was working at WRC came in with a little packet with a tiny little microphone on it, and he said, well, you've got one from the 1940s, you might as well have one from the 1980s where we were throwing this one out. So that, I added that to the collection. So two NBC wireless microphones.
Hey, I want to ask you, and if you don't know anything about these microphones, then just don't worry, but I've always been curious about those tiny little microphones that Countryman makes that have the little element, this almost the size of the head of a big push pin. Do you know anything about those?
I don't know much about those. I may make an assumption that they're electret condenser, but I
sure,
really don't know. Sure. See, they're too new.
Yeah. Yeah. John, we're going to take our final break, and here what we do, and I'm sorry I didn't warn you about this. When we come back from the break, the last thing we'd like to do is leave our listeners and viewers with a tip. Like if they want more information, or maybe there's a website that you just love to go to and spend time looking at about microphones, or just where folks might get more information on that. Anything you want to leave our viewers, listeners with in terms of a tip, please have that ready in about 2 minutes from now. Can you do that?
All right.
Okay, good. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by my friends at the TELUS Alliance and Omnia. With the new Omnia Volt, and I think we have I hope we have a video to run about that. Let's take a look at this.
More top radio stations choose Omnia than all other competing processors combined. Now meet the Omnia Volt, sharing lineage with Omnia processors like the Omnia 11, electrifying, competitive, market-leading audio in a compact one-rack unit package. With Omnia Heritage built in, the Omnia Volt includes Dynamics Magic from Omnia chief algorithm designer Cornelius Gould, including six AGC sections from start to finish, deep bass, warmth, and stereo enhancers, five-band time-align limiter, the world's best presets to get you started right, and spectrally pristine final processing designed by Frank Foti. Omnia Volt users love its Quick Tweak feature. Quick Tweak distills years of processing knowledge and proven approaches into simple controls that turn you into a processing pro. Nail your signature sound in minutes using advanced presets or your own settings right from the Volt's front panel or a PC. OmniVault brings charisma to your station's audio. FM translators and low-power FM stand out among the crowd. AM stations maximize clarity and coverage. Digital broadcasts sound clear and musical without fatiguing artifacts. Smart design, clearly visible outside and inside. Input and output connections in analog, AES-3, Livewire, and multiplex for FM. Automatic input selection handles redundant STLs. Remote control works with today's browsers, tablets, and smartphones. Idealized patch point for external watermarking. And hardened construction to withstand lightning strikes, surges, high RF fields, and harsh conditions.
The new OmniVault is stunning. Everyone will know you've got an Omnia on your station.
OmniVault is versatile, too. DSP Core firmware alters the personality of Volt to fit your changing needs. FM, AM, digital transmission, or studio processing. Volt can even be used as a standalone stereo generator. DSP cores aren't extra cost add-ons. Download the functionality you need for free. The OmniVault. Omnia audio processing for any station. And a smart upgrade for aspiring broadcasters. Proven audio processing that'll leave your competitors in the dust.
We just had an SBE meeting today and got to talk about the OmniVault. And it's amazing. It'll do all these different things. It is inexpensive, like it's under $3,500. So check it out. The OmniVault is now shipping. They got them in stock, and they're shipping out the door. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with John Holt. We're about to wrap up our show on vintage microphones. And John, I'm sorry to surprise you with a tip, but maybe you can leave our viewers with some tidbits to take away and go follow up on. What do you think?
Well, I think if people are interested in learning more about old microphones, that the best site that they could actually go to is coutant.org, coutant.org. And he has pictures and stories and manuals of many of the microphones that we saw today and many, many more. He was a, Mr. Coutant, a professor of communications, and he put together this site to teach his students over the years. And now I think he's left the site to other communications instructors to maintain and keep up, but it's a great resource for anyone who's interested in microphones, and it has links to a number of other interesting web pages. That's coutant.org.
I'm so glad you mentioned that site, because as we've been going through the show, I've been Googling and looking up some of the microphones you talk about, and more than half the time, the first response, the first place to go check out this mic is at that website, coutant.org, and we'll have several links to that site in the show notes. So thank you. It's a great site. I was looking up the RCA 44BX, and they're beautiful drawings of even how to use it on television shows.
Yes,
how the position should be, and lots of actors and famous people doing radio dramas, and there's a picture of Elvis and different presidents and people giving speeches. Wow. Great recommendation. Now,
I think there's a lot of interesting material. I collect not only the microphones, but whatever manuals and stuff I can find from that period. And some of the information is just amazing. And some of it's on the web. Another great site for everything in broadcasting is radiohistory.com, AmericanRadioHistory.com. You can find everything imaginable there.
I'm going to see which site it is. Try AmericanRadioHistory.com, and that's a website. And there's lots of periodicals. Is that what you were thinking
right.
of?
Yes, yeah, but they okay. also have a very many many manuals. You can also do searches of RCA Review, the Western Electric Journals, and come up, just search for microphone, and you come up with all of these amazing original articles from the time the microphones came out, written by the people who designed the microphones.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's good. I'll put these both of these as well as others into our show notes so people can just click and find out about it. We'll have that memorialized there. John, we got to go. I want to thank you so much for joining us and the work you put in, not only the passion, your hobby itself, but the work you put into this very presentation to bring us such a great overview of these old microphones. Thank you.
I enjoyed it, and we don't want to forget to mention thank you to WVTF Radio IQ in Paxton, Durham for allowing me to use the bandwidth in this nice Charlottesville studio.
And it's looked great. And you're doing, you know, normally our guests and ourselves, we do the show with laptop computers and webcams. You've done your end of this, the whole thing, on a smartphone. Which model phone are you using?
This is a iPhone 6.
And it's amazing. Even the front-facing camera, which I suppose you're using now, the front-facing camera looks better than many, if not most, webcams.
Yeah. I'm stunned by what I can do with this phone. So I'm waiting. My contract runs out another month, and I'm waiting to get the iPhone 7. We'll see how that works.
I just upgraded my wife to that phone, and she does love it. John, I sure appreciate it again. Thank you so much. We're going to have to go, and we'll have all these show notes coming up in the published version. You can please remind your friends, remind yourself, put it on your calendar that This Week in Radio Tech airs live every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 Central and 2 Pacific Time. We always forget about those mountain folks. I guess it's 3 o'clock Mountain Time. And then we have the show. The show also is what's on Facebook Live, my page, the This Week in Radio Tech page, and the GFQ Network page on Facebook Live. Then if you want to, you know, just go to a place where you know it's going to be there, a couple of places actually, thisweekinradiotech.com. Also, gfqnetwork.com. And, well, it's on YouTube. So you can look up TWRT, This Week in Radio Tech, on YouTube, and you can subscribe to that channel and always be apprised of when there's a new episode. So about once a week, you might get a little notification if you have that turned on that there's a new episode of This Week in Radio Tech. You can find all or almost all of our old episodes there. We've done 354 episodes now to date with lots of famous people like John Holt. So we appreciate those are the places you can find that. Put it on your calendar, tell your friends, and please patronize our sponsors and let them know that you appreciate them sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. It's really helpful. All right, my best wishes to my compadre Chris Tobin. Hope he's not still stuck in traffic, but he might be. And also thanks to Suncast, our producer every week does a great job. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, who is the founder of the GFQ Network. John Holt, thanks again, buddy. Appreciate you.
No problem. Fun.
All right. Got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.